All right, fans, we're standing by here with Terry Funk. Ric Flair has said that on July the 1st, right here on Superstation TBS, he will make his announcement whether to surrender the championship or to defend the championship. But I'll tell you this, off the record, he said he was going to take care of you one way or the other somewhere down the line, my friend.
Oh, let me tell you something, Jim Ross, and you simple-minded people, I had a dream last night. Oh, yes, and it was a beautiful dream. I dreamed that I was on the front porch of the Double Cross Ranch, and my father, who's long since gone, was there in a swing, swinging with me. And up drove a long black limousine, and the left front fender was dented in, and the door opened, and out stepped a beautiful lady. And my daddy said, "Woman, what happened to your left front fender?" And she says, "I ran over some kind of an animal on the road. I don't know what it was." My daddy said, "Well, what did it look like?" And she says, "Well, it had great big ears, and it had nostrils, big, huge nostrils, about 5 inches apart. And it had horse teeth, and it smelled real bad." And my daddy said, "My world, girl, you must have ran over a jackass." And I said, "What did it smell like?" She said, "It smelled like hairspray and cheap cologne." I said, "Woman, you didn't run over any jackass. You ran over Ric Flair. Is he dead?" She says, "No, but the last time I saw him, he was running scared." "Well, let me tell you something, Ric Flair. You look at me in the eye because I am looking at you. You realize that you must live not in the future, because there is none. You must live in the past. Give up that belt, or I'll stick your neck out one more time for me. Stick it out for me, Flair. You gutless individual. I'm talking to you.
That's enough.
Stick it out. Stick it out."
We're not going to listen anymore to this, fans. We'll be back with the Steiners in just a moment.
To truly understand the scope of Terry Funk's career, early on in his career, he wrestled Pat O'Connor, one of the earliest NWA champions of all time. At the end of his career, but not the tail end, within the last 10 years, he had a match with CM Punk. Terry Funk, for more than 50 years, was always in the main event, was always the top of the card, was always someone that somebody wanted to see. I said it on our post on Facebook and Instagram. He left each promotion better than when he arrived. I think, and this isn't just a personal preference, I would put Terry Funk in my top five wrestlers of all time. Not just WWE, not just NWA, all time, between what he can do in the ring, what he did on the mic, the passion he had. I think he should be recognized as a top five. In just no specific order, no specific spot, with everything Terry Funk brought to the industry and did for the industry, it deserves. I mean, even for his amount of retirements alone, Terry Funk is a top five talent.
Yeah,
as Cody said on SmackDown, a lot of wrestlers said that they went to West Texas State University. Terry Funk actually went to West Texas State University. He's a second-generation superstar. His father is Dory Funk Sr. His brother, of course, Dory Funk Jr. The Funks, one of the few brothers to win heavyweight championships. He started working for his father's Western State Sports Promotion, which was in, of course, Amarillo, Texas. He debuted in 1965.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, jeez. 65. And he didn't retire until 2017. Probably one of the bigger moments of his career was in 75. He defeated Jack Briscoe for the NWA Championship. He then had a 14-month reign as champion. He defended it all over the world. America, Australia, Japan, Singapore. Ironically, it ended in Toronto at the hands of Harley Race, who earlier had beat Dory Funk Jr. for the NWA title as well. Harley Race lifted Funk up for a shinbreaker and trapped him in that dreaded Indian deathlock, which Triple H brought back in the early 2000s. Funk failed to respond, and the match was stopped. In about 81, one of his biggest feuds of all time kicked off in Continental Wrestling Association, where he feuded with Jerry Lawler. They had probably one of the more memorable wrestling matches of all time. This was an empty arena match where only Lance Russell, a cameraman, and a photographer were present with Funk and Lawler. Funk said that he wanted to do this because he was treated unfairly by the Memphis crowd. And he wanted no one yelling at him. He wanted to prove he was the better wrestler. This only lasted a few minutes, and Funk tried to put a broken 2x4 into Jerry Lawler's eye. Lawler kicked Funk's elbow, causing him to hit himself in the eye. This is one of the earlier and more widespread, you know, you blinded me angles. But it wasn't just in America that Terry Funk was well known. He and his brother Dory were huge in Japan, probably some of the largest gaijin, which is the American, or, you know, the white superstars, to appear there. This is when his brawling really came out. It really started. They faced The Sheik and Abdullah the Butcher. They faced Stan Hansen and Bruiser Brody. They also feuded with Giant Baba. Even in Japan, they fought the who's who. Funk made his first WWF debut in 1985. He not only beat up the wrestler he fought, which was Aldo Moreno, but he also beat up the ring announcer. And he beat him up because the ring announcer made the mistake of putting on Terry's cowboy hat. It was at this time that Funk would bring his branding iron to the ring, and he would brand people. They feuded with Junkyard Dog, and when I say they, it was Funk, Dory, who called himself Hoss Funk. I still am unaware why they had to change Dory's name. And then Jimmy Jack Funk, who was a storyline cousin. And if the name sounds familiar to people, he's the one that got the Rockers fired in their first run. They were managed by Jimmy Hart. And during this time, he fought, you know, the who's who of baby faces. Tito Santana, Junkyard Dog, Hulk Hogan. But Terry Funk, like a lot of the cowboys, a lot of the wrestlers at the time, they didn't really stay in one territory. At this time, he then went into WCW for the first of many runs. It was actually in 89 that he went there. He kind of had a break. He wanted to be an actor. Hollywood came calling. He had a couple roles. He was in Roadhouse with Patrick Swayze. He's in Over the Top with Sylvester Stallone. Acting wasn't for Terry. I can't speculate as to why it didn't work. I don't know if it's because he always looked like he was 60. I don't know if it's because he had that odd voice that really didn't translate well to movies. He also wasn't like the biggest guy, so it's not like they could use him in a Hulk Hogan role. But I digress. Went to WCW in 89. Ric Flair just beat Ricky Steamboat the NWA title at WrestleWar. Terry Funk was brought in as one of the judges for the event. And as Flair was celebrating, he challenged him for the title. Flair said no, and he said that Funk was spending too much time in Hollywood instead of focusing on wrestling. This drove Funk mad, and he attacked Flair, and he pile-drove him on the table on the outside. This was in 89 at the time when American wrestling did not have a lot of hardcore elements. Flair then acted like, you know, in kayfabe, his neck was broken, he was out of action until he had to face Funk. Flair won by reversing a small package that Funk had put on him, but after was attacked by Gary Hart and the Great Muta, who, along with a couple other superstars, teamed with Terry Funk to form the JTEX Corporation, which was the Japan Texas Corporation. This was another Gary Hart stable. Touched on him in our profiles if you want to go back and take a look. Funk returned, and he had an I Quit match with Ric Flair at Clash of Champions 9, which Funk lost by yelling that he quit. This was a 5-star rated match by Dave Meltzer. And Terry Funk tried to use an actual plastic shopping bag to suffocate Ric Flair on live television. Shortly after losing to Flair at another Clash of Champions, he shook Ric Flair's hand and got attacked by the JTAG stable. And he then became a color commentator, and he hosted his own segment called Funk's Grill, where he wore tuxedos and he would interview superstars. And it didn't last too long until he eventually left WCW at this time. He then showed up in ECW before it was Extreme. This was Eastern Championship Wrestling in 93. Before appearing there, you know, he made an appearance at Slamboree, which is a Legends pay-per-view. It's a fun one. Go back and take a look. He fought Tully Blanchard, two of my favorites in the ring. Definitely past their prime, but still a better match than probably 70% of people could do today. He then promised to help Eastern Championship Wrestling, and that he did. He and Dory Funk, keep in mind this was 93-94. You're looking almost 30 years after he debuted. He and his brother fought the Public Enemy in a barbed wire match. And he continued having a schedule with ECW. You know, he fought Cactus Jack, Shane Douglas, the Sandman, Sabu, and his own protege, the Extreme Innovator, Tommy Dreamer. He did make another pit stop in WCW. As I said, the Slamboree. He became a member of Colonel Robert Parker's stud stable, along with Arn Anderson, Ming, and a wrestler called Bunkhouse Buck. I mean, think about that, if you will. I mean, they were the losing heel stable in a War Games match that involved Dusty, Dustin, and the Nasty Boys. There was a team that had Arn Anderson, Ming, and Terry Funk. That's just an ass-kicking team that's not going to care who you are. While in ECW, he continued to have these extreme matches. Things that, I mean, even younger talent shouldn't be doing, but here he is. And it was fantastic because at their first pay-per-view, he won the ECW championship from Raven. Earlier in the night, he defeated the Sandman and Stevie Richards in a triple threat, earning the match with Raven, and he won the championship, and the power was about to go out for the feed, so the last image was of him with the crowd holding the title up. He eventually lost the title to Sabu in another barbed wire match. And this is the one where Sabu had his biceps torn open, and he had to be taped up in order for the match to continue. Both men had to be cut out of the barbed wire at the end of the match. Shortly after this was when the first Terry Funk retirement happened. I guess you'd call it the second because he left for Hollywood, but this was the first retirement show. This was the Terry Funk WrestleFest. You know, WWF, ECW, I think even some WCW hands were there. Terry Funk lost to Bret Hart in a match. Paul Heyman presented him with a belt. And he was then declared the lifetime ECW heavyweight champion. As retirements in wrestling go, and retirements for Terry Funk go, this did not last long. He came back. This is when he became Chainsaw Charlie. He was in a box, and he cut himself out with a chainsaw. It was just going to be Terry Funk, as the story goes, but I think he saw what Mick Foley was doing with the multiple characters, and he wanted to try one of his own. And if he was in a box, you know, he's going to cut himself out. The announcers did not know who was in the box. So out comes Terry Funk in a bright red shirt, suspenders holding his jeans up, and wearing pantyhose on his head. He mainly teamed with Mick Foley, who was Cactus Jack, and they actually defeated the New Age Outlaws for the Tag Team Championship at WrestleMania 14. They beat them in a dumpster match, one of my favorite matches to watch. WrestleMania 14 is one that I had on tape. It was just so crazy. I mean, little Logan trying to figure out why these guys are trying to stick each other in dumpsters. even though they explained clearly that Billy Gunn and Road Dogg put Cactus Jack and Terry Funk in a dumpster and pushed them off the stage, but I'm still like, why a dumpster? I don't understand. They lost the titles the next night on Raw in a steel cage match. And then randomly, he started being Terry Funk again. He formed a tag team with ECW legend Too Cool Scorpio. And then, you know, he had some matches. He started teaming with Bradshaw for a bit. This is another core memory I have of Terry Funk and Bradshaw fighting. And they fought Farouk and Scorpio. And again, pretty much what I knew from wrestling at the time of older wrestling was in my video games. And in the video games, Farouk and Bradshaw are partners. So I'm like, why are they facing each other? Why are they fighting? This is when Terry Funk announced he was going to retire again. Bradshaw attacked him. This was late summer of 98. Would you be shocked if I told you at ECW's November to Remember, Terry Funk was supposed to be the mystery tag partner of Tommy Dreamer? What? Would you be even more surprised if I told you it was Jake Roberts?
Yes. What the fuck is Jake Roberts doing there?
And this is when Jake Roberts wrestled in, like, jeans and a polo, and it's not a good look. This is before he got himself clean. Funk then yelled and attacked Dreamer every chance he could in ECW. And it was going to lead up to a match. We've seen it time and time again. You didn't pick me as your partner. Don't you trust me? Blah, blah, blah. Unfortunately, Funk got ill, and he retired yet again in mid-99. Would you be surprised if I told you he turned up in WCW in 2000? Not only winning the Hardcore Championship three times, which is a company record, by the way, and the United States Championship for a second time, he was also WCW Commissioner. And my favorite fact about this time, leader of the Old Age Outlaws. Terry Funk, Arn Anderson, Larry Zbyszko, and Paul Orndorff.
The Old Age Outlaws.
Yeah, they feuded with NWO. Yep. You know, someone at WCW thought that was just sticking to WWE.
I think it's hilarious.
I love it. I just like that all, and like none of them cared. You know, wrestlers now, or even like Hogan. Hey, you're going to be the Old Age Outlaws. I'm not old, brother.
Whoa.
Hey. Don't do that.
No.
Well, then these four are like, yeah, do it. Yeah. You know, they had a feud, WCW ended. His career didn't stop there. He started to regularly work for Ring of Honor and MLW. He fought Punk. He fought the Extreme Horsemen. He still did no ropes barbed wire matches and War Games matches. Into the 2000s. He appeared on MLW's final show in 2017. You know, he worked the Hardcore Homecoming show, which was Shane Douglas's big ECW tribute.
Yeah.
It was another barbed wire match. And, you know, before that happened, he was in NWA TNA. He teamed with Sandman, and he fought The Gathering, which was Julio De Niro and CM Punk. Luckily, he got his win back against Punk. He teamed with Raven, and he defeated Punk and De Niro. He also just, you know, for TNA, appeared in 2009 at a house show as a special enforcer for a match with Steiner and Samoa Joe. Before that, though, around the time of Hardcore Homecoming, he didn't make an appearance at the first One Night Stand because he did Hardcore Homecoming. Terry Funk is always about values, not about money. But he made a brief return in 2006 for the second One Night Stand. He confronted Mick Foley, because this is when Mick Foley was anti-hardcore. He attacked Tommy Dreamer. And Funk would actually team with Dreamer and Beulah McGillicuddy, Tommy Dreamer's wife, in a losing effort to Foley, Edge, and Lita. Funk had his eye injured with barbed wire partway through the match. And he ran back out partway with a bloody cloth over his eye and a flaming 2x4 wrapped in barbed wire. This is one of my favorite matches of not only the pay-per-view, but WWE ECW at the time. Because at the end of it, he's in all this barbed wire and he's wrapped up. And you hear him in his southern drawl go, "Help me. Help me. Cut me out. I'm in the barbed wire." And people have to go cut him out again. And this is 2006. So this is, what, 40 years after he debuted? And he's still... why? You know, he kept making independent appearances. It was supposed to be... I remember he was supposed to be on WWE ECW. I don't know what happened. I don't know if he saw the writing on the wall or the wall. He then went to, he started appearing on the indies pretty much until 2017. And I mean, you touched on it beforehand. He did a steel cage match with Dusty Rhodes in a high school gym.
Yeah.
He did stuff in Japan. He did stuff here in North America. He appeared at Ring of Honor's Glory by Honor 9, where he was the ringside enforcer.
And I was looking through his cage match profile, just like, because yeah, he has just so many pages, right?
Yeah, there's like 26.
26, and they're all full. So I eventually came across this one. Let me see if I can find it again. Right here. A WWF house show in November of 1985. The peak of Hulkamania. Terry Funk himself defeats Hulk Hogan in a WWF World Heavyweight Championship match. By countouts.
Of course.
So the title didn't change hands, brother. But Terry Funk did get the win at a house show in Denver, Colorado over Hogan in 85. So...
Well, that's the thing. Even when he was on the indies, and I know I kind of joked about it beforehand, but you look at these names he fought from 2006 to 2017, he had matches with Masahiro Chono, he had matches with Tomohiro Ishii, he was involved in a match with Tyler Black and Roderick Strong, he still would team with Tommy Dreamer, he and Mick Foley lost, but they still fought Roddy Piper and Bob Orton at a Gathering of the Juggalos event in Japan. In 2014, he teamed with Mil Mascaris. He also teamed with Masakatsu Funaki, Kaz Hayashi. He teamed with Funaki and Mascaris, and they defeated Kaz Hayashi, Nosawa Rangai, and Fujiwara. Don't let that stop him, though. 2015, he showed up at AIW's Big Trouble Little China event. You want to know who he attacked? Eddie Kingston.
Nice.
And even at the end of his career, he had a feud with Jerry Lawler. Funk announced his retirement again at House of Hardcore 17. He did a lot of House of Hardcore for Tommy Dreamer. But he made another return, this time in 2017, Big Time Wrestling, North Carolina. It was he and the Rock and Roll Express against Doug Gilbert, Jerry Lawler, and Brian Christopher, who, of course, is Jerry Lawler's son. I think this is great, because when we talked about the Ric Flair last match, I talked about how, you know, it should have been Flair and some horsemen against the Rock and Roll Express and Sting, because that was Flair's big feuds, they could still work. Terry Funk got to have that match, essentially, but for his own career. It baffles me. And I know it's like a running... It's a running joke. You know, I discover all these people off of Legends of Wrestling games. That was one of the first places I saw him, and it was such a shock, because you could go through... Every person had four costumes. And his was him in his red and black tights with his, you know, Funk You shirt. And he had another one where he was in just black tights, no Funk You shirt. And then it went to when he's NWA champion. And it was, you know, the underwear looking tights, no facial hair, a perm. And I'm like, what the hell is this? Like, it just shows how long of a scope he had. But, you know, it wasn't just indies he ended his career with. He got inducted into the Hall of Fame with Dory Funk in 2009. Of course, Dusty inducted him.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know if you remember, before the Dean Ambrose-Brock Lesnar match, which was not very good, he gave Ambrose that chainsaw that was supposed to be, you know, it was kind of used in the match, I think. But he gave him the chainsaw, Foley gave him, you know, Barbie, the 2x4 with the barbed wire wrapped around it. So even up until 32, Terry Funk still had his hand, like, on the industry. And it's just, it's funny to me, because I talk about all the tapes that I used to have, right?
Yeah.
So, the ones that I had, I didn't have anything NWA, but I had 80s WCW, late 90s WWF, late 90s, early 2000s WCW, ECW, and some Eastern Championship Wrestling. And there's only one guy that was on all of them at one point or another, and that was Terry Funk. Like, the man, that's why I said, I mean, even, you know, if you take everything he's done, just how long he lasted, and always, like, he never, you see some of these old guys, I'm not going to say any names, but they get jobbed out at the end of their career, or they go to a convention, they have no one at their line. Like, Terry wasn't one of those guys. So that, I think, makes him a top five. You go through with his just championship accomplishments. Him and Dory won the World's Strongest Tag Determination League in All Japan Pro Wrestling in 77, 79, and 82. They won the Florida Tag Team Championships of NWA twice. He was the ECW champion twice. He was an ECW television champion once. He and Dory won the NWA Georgia version of the Tag Team Championship. He was the NWA WCW US champion twice, WCW Hardcore champion three times. He won the NWA United States Championship Tournament in 75. He was a 1995 WCW Hall of Fame member. Of course, the NWA Heavyweight Champion going into their Hall of Fame in 2009. Then you go down to, you know, the WWE, and he was a tag team champion there and went in the Hall of Fame in 2009. He won the tag team championships damn near, yeah, it was over 30 years after he debuted, when most people would have either hung it up or a lot of people from that time would have already been dead. He's still winning championships, still, you know, feuding with DX. How many people can say they got to feud with the Horsemen, DX, and the NWO? Fight Ric Flair when he was champion, fight Hulk Hogan when he was champion, fight Bret Hart when he was champion. There's something about Funk that's definitely going to be missed. Just everything he did, everything he accomplished. I mean, even with those, I joked about the retirements before, but even with those, I mean, how many people are in the WWE, WCW, and NWA Hall of Fame?
Not many, I assume.
No. That's why I said he, for me, and I think in general, should be a top five. He had the charisma. He had the ability. I mean, he could brawl. He could do hardcore. He could do amateur wrestling. He could do tag. Not very many people got to go over on Hogan, even my count out. Not very many people got to go over on Flair.
No.
So, I mean, yeah, those 50 years, and it's not like some people where the 50 years there's gaps or no one really cared. These 50 years all meant something. You could do an entire book on just Terry Funk in wrestling. Not even talk about any of the stories or any of the backstage, just his matches in general. Just a pure pioneer of not only professional wrestling, but especially the extreme style. There's just this one definitely, this one up there for deaths is, to me, as big as a Bruno, a Dusty, a Harley Race. I talked about it before, I forget on which one, but we're slowly losing more and more of these historically figures. Hopefully, before something happens to Dory, he's able to put something out about the times he and his brother had up and down the road.
Yeah.
I know that the SmackDown tribute, Cody did great. Cody called him a cowboy. Cody talked about him and Dusty and how he'd keep kayfabe. Terry Funk had one of those shirts he made. You'd always see him where it's like, I broke Wahoo's leg, I did this. His said, Dusty sucks eggs. Hilarious. But then they did a, and I'll just touch on it briefly, this was a lot of positivity, I don't want to end it negatively. Yeah. They did a Terry Funk. Terry Funk tag team match. It's implied it was going to be hardcore and extreme. Because it was what, Terry Funk Rules tag team match? Is that the official name?
I don't remember. It was a Terry Funk Hardcore tag match.
It's nice that they did a tag match and a tornado, because he and Dory did a lot of those. Mm-hmm. If you're going to do a Terry Funk Rules, a man who at either 50 or 60 years old was still getting ripped open by barbed wire, throw more weapons in. I mean, hell, him and Cactus Jack had the memorable moment when the fans threw the chairs into the ring. Somehow recreate that. Have it be a lumberjack match and have the lumberjacks toss the chairs into the ring. The only true tribute I saw was the Brutes. Terry Funk always put the ladder on his head and spun in circle and hit the wrestlers in the ring. Probably hurting himself too, but they did that, but with Pete Dunne instead of a ladder, so it kind of took away the wow factor. Just a lot they could have done. They just didn't. I kind of hope that a company like Ring of Honor, MLW, even one of the Japan promotions, they do something a little more. I mean, he was in those King of the Deathmatch matches. I don't know. I just felt like, and I know they were pressed for time. Things happened, you know, both he and Bray went the same week. I just personally, and it could be biased, but I felt like it was lacking.
Yeah. Well, I think it probably just has to do because of Bray was still active. He was there week to week. All of his friends, close personal friends, are still wrestling, so. And,
I'm wondering if Cody hadn't been there, if anyone would have, if they would have flown like Mick out or something, or if it would have just been a video package and that would have been it.
Maybe. I don't want to speculate this.
No. So. But like I said, long career. Tried his hand in Hollywood. Besides his early ones that I mentioned, he was also in Paradise Alley, The Ringer, and he also choreographed the last fight in Rocky V, which is probably the only good moment of that movie. I think if you could call any professional wrestler a cult classic, it's going to be Terry Funk. But as I said, top five, not only in my mind and my heart, but I think he should be for everyone all time. Do you have any closing things to say about the 50 years that the lifetime that this man brought to the wrestling business?
I'll just say this, just to speak on the longevity of Terry Funk. You can fit Hulk Hogan's entire career within Terry Funk's career.
Yeah.
Hogan started after and retired before. Had his last match before. Terry Funk had his last match, so yeah, obviously Terry Funk is a legend, a legend of wrestling, if you would say.
Yeah. and I mean,
I know a lot of newer fans probably never seen him because he's like you said before, his WWF runs were not necessarily groundbreaking, we'll say.
No.
But there's stuff out there. You need if you call yourself a diehard wrestling fan and you're on the younger side, you might not have seen Terry Funk wrestle or have just heard your favorite old-timey wrestlers talk about him.
Yeah.
He's definitely somebody you need to check out.
I retweeted on my personal page. Someone did a tweet or an X thread, I guess you'd call it now, of recorded matches of Terry Funk for every year of his career that they were recorded. A lot of his indie stuff wasn't. So definitely go check that out. Some that come to mind, I touched on the dumpster match, the Ric Flair I Quit match. He also, at a time in WCW, wrestled a young Eddie Guerrero. I'm pretty sure he also had a standoff with Stone Cold on Shotgun Saturday Night. And that one-night stand match in 2006 is probably one of the only good matches that WWE CW ever produced. So, a little bit of Sutton for every era in the timeline. Whatever you're into, wrestling, extreme, you're a WWE homer, a WCW homer. There's something for you with Terry.
And even if you're an AEW homer, most of the people that work there take their inspiration from him, probably.
Oh, yeah. So. Especially, I know Kingston, because Eddie Kingston yelled at Schiavone when they called Bryan Danielson the GOAT. And he said, it's essentially Terry Funky fucker. I know Moxley probably takes inspiration. Yeah. Nope, he's everywhere. I think between him and Dusty, that's where a lot of the better wrestlers today come from.